cycling podcast Femina in association with Rafa. From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee stops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport.
You are listening to daily episodes of the cycling podcast Femina from the OVO Energy Women's Tour, brought to you by Skoda. Dedicated to closing the gender gap in cycling, one race, one cyclist at a time. This is our time. Today, we're in Southwold.
I'm Corinne Rivera from Team Sunweb, and I think the challenging stages could be tomorrow with some wind, and also the last stage looks pretty hilly. And then my prediction is hopefully Team Sunweb wins it, so we're all in.
I'm Chloe Hosking, and I race for Ellie Cipollini. They're such strange races. You know, you can always get brakes going, and they're quite heavy stages, so you can get girls who aren't necessarily the fastest but can get to the end fresher, still up there contesting the finish. So for sure you get crafty riders like Lucinda Brandon, Manduris are always really good at these races. So that's what I think makes it so exciting, that it's a bit more unpredictable than other races.
I'm Elisa Longo-Borghini from Wigo Life 5, and I think one of the middle stages would be the decisive one. Still don't know which one yet, but in the middle of the week they look pretty hectic and hard.
Yeah, my name is Emma Norsgaard-Jorgensen. I'm from Isabella Bigla. It's my first year as professional, so I honestly don't know. Of course, I hope somebody from my team, but let's see how it's going. We're a strong team and we're working well together, so if we will, we can do it, I'm sure.
Hi, I'm Gracie Elvin and I ride for Mitchelton Scott. It's definitely more open for the sprinters this year, unlike the last couple of years. So we could see a sprinter do well overall, but then you've got riders like Niwa Doma. She's got a good teammate here in Prevost. The whole Canyon team's pretty strong, to be honest. And then, I think we've got Voss here as well, and she hasn't raced for a little while, so I think it's going to be exciting to watch her too.
Hi, I'm Marianne Voss, riding for Wild Eagle Spur Cycling. In a race like this, it can happen every day. So you can't win the first day, but you can lose it. And it's you have to be sharp every single moment of the race. It looks like the stages are getting harder until the finish. So yeah, every day is important. There are so many riders that can do and want to do good here, and the strong teams. It depends on how it goes. Will there be a breakaway going to stay into the line, and otherwise there's a pack of good sprinters that can win the race. Too wide open to make a prediction.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore. I'm with Orla Shinawi.
Hello.
And Rose Manley.
Hello, guys.
Hi, we're in Southwold. It's beautiful, sunny, a bit breezy. It might be a bit. We're sitting outside the Adnams Brewery, drinking a nice Adnams beer.
Yes, me and you, Richard, are. And Orla's gone for...
I've gone for Elderflower.
Lovely. Yeah. Well, we are here because stage one of the OVO Energy Women's Tour finished here a couple of hours ago. We heard at the start of the programme there a little montage of voices from the start in Framlingham this morning. As they looked ahead, some of the riders looked ahead to today and to the rest of the race. And, well, Yulian Doerr was the winner, Mitchelton Scott sprinter. This was the stage that we expected to end in a big bunch sprint, and it did. But there was quite a lot of drama, a few crashes. And we'll hear some interviews from a few of the riders involved in the sprint and in some of the crashes too. Orla, have you got what are you calling this?
Story of the stage, yeah.
Well, I saw someone put on Twitter, I can't remember who they were, but they wrote Odyssey of the Day.
Well, you see, I like alliteration when it comes to this. We were discussing this at dinner last night. We saw Odyssey, but I thought Orla's Odyssey might be a little bit grandiose.
Slightly
as
pretentious.
If you're not going to go for grandiose, Orla, come on.
Or indeed, Odyssey. But, you know, keep it tight, Orla, keep it tight.
Well, I will keep it as tight as the race and the action and the riders deserve, Richard. Thank you very much.
Here.
Off we go. Deep breaths. Dive in. Right, stage one, a 130-kilometre sprint from Framlingham to Southwold.
130-kilometre sprint?
It was a sprint.
Okay, yep. All the way.
To Southwold in Suffolk. Would you let me get past the first sentence? I say sprint, Richard, because it was controlled all day long for the sprint. And it is the stage that we expected to finish in a bunch sprint. It was one that could have been conducive to breakaway. But in the end, different attacks along the way, but none of them managed to stick, and the teams were happy for it to be essentially a sprint stage. Happy? Right. Now, at 26 kilometres to go, we did have a very brief escape for Suzanne Anderson of High Tech Products. She got up to 11-second gap, but that didn't last for very long. We did have the Queen of the Mountains and Sprint Points on offer, or Queen of the Undulation, as our colleague Edward Pickering called it. I like that because it's not very mountainous today's stage. It's pretty much flat. Queen of the bumps. Christine Madgeris got that of Bowles Dolmans. Just one Queen of the Mountains today. The last time actually the race visited Southwold, Madgeris took the stage win in 2016. We had two sprints then. The first one, intermediate sprint, 1-2-3 went to Cora Navera of Team Sunweb, Amy Peters of Bowles Dolmans, and Chloe Hosking of Ali Cipollini. So 3, 2, and 1 points on offer for the intermediate sprints, as well as time bonuses. Then the second sprint was Amy Peters of Bowles Dolmans, Danny Rowe of Wow Deals, and Corin Rivera of Sunweb. So the sprint and the Queen of the Mountains jerseys both go to Bowles Dolmans this evening on the backs of Peters and Madgeris. Now, as I say, it was a sprint, essentially, very tightly controlled, but the flip side of that was that we did have a very hectic finale, everyone trying to get into position for that sprint. At 10 kilometres to go or thereabouts, we had one crash with Kirsten Will taken out of contention, so no repeat of stage one of the Tour de Yorkshire for her when she took the sprint win. And then another crash a few kilometres later, with three Wiggle High Five riders taken out in that one as well. Audrey Cordon-Ragot, Annette Edmondson, and Katie Archibald. Now, we didn't get to see any of those crashes. We were following on intermittent Twitter updates, so we were getting all our updates from the riders at the end. There were a few more crashes along the way. Danny Rowe came off with 20 kilometres to go. She said she had a soft landing and ended in a hedge, but that was her fault, she said. Then in the final 400 metres or so, a terrible crash taking out Trek Drop's Abby Van Twisk. Now, we had noted on our four-wheeled recce of the finish that there was strong potential for mishap. In the final 2 kilometres, we had a sharp left-hand turn, a patch of quite terrible road surface, actually, which seems to have been the undoing of Abby, and then a sharp right-hand turn. Now, it seems that Abby fell before the right-hand turn on that patch of bad road, and hit a pothole, we understand. Again, that's going from rider accounts. She has gone to hospital. We'll give you an update on that a little bit later, but it was a fast finish, and the win went to, as you said, Richard, Julian Dora of Mitchelton Scott, who's just come off the back of a broken collarbone. Back-to-back wins for Dora, who won the final sprint of 2017 in London. The second place went to Marta Bastianelli of Ali Cipollini, and third, Corin Rivera of Team Sunweb. So Rivera's time bonuses at the intermediate sprint means that she actually finishes second on GC at the end of stage one. She's 2 seconds behind Dora, with Marta Bastianelli 4 seconds off the lead. And the best British rider is Danny Rowe, who finished in fifth, 8 seconds off the top. So there are the results.
Wonderfully succinct.
Beautiful. Oh, wonderfully succinct. I should do that more often.
No, you're going to do it every day. It was really kind of old school reporting today, wasn't it? Mm. Because we didn't, most of the races we go to now have live television coverage. You can see what's going on. In the old days of reporting on cycling, you relied entirely on what the riders told you. And it was a case of piecing together what happened. So that was quite fun. We all spoke to lots of riders at the finish and got their various accounts. They only really know what happened to them. So it's a bit of a pixelated picture unless you can speak to enough people to fill in all the gaps.
Well, that's why I say about Abby Van Twisk, because I got the account of what happened to her from Cassia Nieuwiedema, who figured it was within 400 metres. So it might be that when you see the television coverage, that's not quite right. But it's interesting to go off the riders' accounts to see how accurate that is as well in relation to what actually happened. But certainly that's what we understand. We know it was a bad crash.
If you're watching the TV coverage later and some of these facts are not facts.
That is my caveat.
Two caveats. 60% accuracy is our aim, our ambition. Ooh. But also we haven't seen it. So we are piecing it together as best we can. We did have a good view of the finishing sprint though, because as you said, Orla, it was quite technical, quite twisty, quite narrow as they came into Southwold, and then a couple of nasty corners, or certainly 90 degree corners. The final one onto the finishing straight and up a hill, and we were sort of at the brow of the hill, and we could see them coming towards us. It was quite a tough little climb to the finish. Really suited a strong sprinter, and impressive that Yolene Duhr in her first race back, and her first the first sprint she's made since she broke her collarbone, she told us, because she's not even been able to sprint in training. So very impressive that she won. She paid tribute to her team. She had a whole team leading her out, which is impressive too.
Which she said they've been working on their lead out in
training
as well.
They've been practicing that, yeah. I grabbed a quick word with her at the finish. She was first, as Orla said. Corinne Rivera, the American on Team Sunweb, was third. Let's hear from both of them now. First, Yolene Duhr, and then Corinne Rivera.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Describe the finale for us here. It was quite a difficult finish with the crosswind, I guess, and it was slightly uphill. How difficult was that to judge?
Yeah, well, the final was pretty fast. We had a tailwind, and of course everybody was really nervous because it's the first stage of the tour. And but we tried to stay relaxed with the team, and we stick to the plan, and in the end that worked out. So yeah, I'm really happy.
And was it a finish that some people didn't perhaps judge so well, because it was quite a steep little climb as well?
Yeah, I knew it. Well, it was a bit uphill and also a strong headwind, so I knew I wasn't allowed to go early. But I did went a bit too early, I guess. But yeah, it was still enough to hold on for the win.
Did you know much about the finish?
Yeah, I looked on Google Street View and I did my homework, so I knew about it, yeah.
Great. And what are your hopes for the race, Yolene? Because it seems like quite an open race and there are no majorly hilly days. Is it a race where you might...
Congrats, girl!
Hey, thanks!
Might you look to keep the yellow jersey?
No, my goal was to have a stage win, and I'm not going for GC. We have other riders in the team to go for GC. So next days I'm going to kill myself for them.
It looked like a complicated run and a few crashes. Were you aware of any of those?
Yeah, they were super crazy and hectic final. I think when Florcha went down, my teammate, and so we had one less person, and we lost contact a lot. So it was a really hectic final, and Lucinda did a really good job getting me into position regardless of the craziness.
How much did you know about the finish? It was quite a tough climb up to the finish.
Yeah, we knew it was slightly uphill. We knew there'd be a lot of wind off the coast and straight headwind. So, we were pretty prepared for that, and... it's a good finish for me, something like that. But ran out of juice there a little bit at the end.
So disappointed to miss out on the win, but happy with how you're feeling?
Yeah, it's a good start for sure. There's four more days here. So, of course, always disappointed to not get a win, but it was a good start nonetheless.
Hi, I'm Juliet Elliott. I'm a cyclist. I race all kinds of bikes, mountain bike marathons, fixed gear crits, road races, BMX, a bit of downhill enduro too. I write about bikes, so I'm a journalist, I'm a blogger, a video maker, I'm a British cycling coach and a mountain bike guide. I support Skoda's campaign to close the gender gap in cycling.
This is our time.
I'd like to see more women riding bikes, mainly because I want more women to ride with, and I want more women racing, because the more women at races, the more fun it is for everyone. But also, I kind of feel like I get to enjoy this really, really cool thing, and other women aren't experiencing it, and I think they should be. They're missing out. So I'll do anything I can to get more women involved. I mean, every time I go to a race, me and my mates, we're always trying to recruit more female racers. But yeah, I mean, not just for racing though. I just think women should be riding bikes for fun. It's not all about pushing yourself. It can just be just for recreation as well.
Yes, thank you very much to Skoda.
Skoda, Skoda.
Well, that was an intervention there from Rob Hatch, pronunciation police. Did anyone see Rob Hatch today? Where does he come from?
He's always watching.
Watching and listening.
You can never mispronounce anything for fear of Rob Hatch popping out from behind the bush.
Rob Hatch reprisals. Yeah. Well, Danny Rowe didn't land on Rob Hatch, wasn't it, when she, landed on a bush earlier. Anyway, that is actually in response to a listener who contacted us last night. I presume slightly tongue-in-cheek. Correct, saying that we're pronouncing Skoda incorrectly. So Skoda.
The problem is when you say it, you sound like you're trying to do
Sean
a really
Connery.
Bad
yeah,
Sean Connery impersonation.
Skoda. So thanks to Skoda for backing us here.
Sticking with Skoda.
And allowing us to be here covering the women's tour. They and our other sponsors very generously support the cycling podcast Femina, and we're very grateful to them. And we'll try and pronounce their name correctly for the rest of the week.
Might be helpful.
Will we? I'm sticking with Skoda. That's what they say in their ads.
True.
So I'm Good sticking point. With what their marketing is.
I'm easily swayed. Whatever you guys say, I'm just going to say anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, the other big talking point today was the crashes. Quite a few crashes and a nasty one involving friend of the Cycling Podcast Femina, Abby Van Twisk. You spoke to her at the start today, Rose, and that's a real shame for her. You know, a young rider on Trek Drops, huge opportunity for her here to ride her home tour, and to be taken out on the first day is a real shame. And there was a bit of worry and concern at the finish, wasn't there, Orla, because she did look in a bad way.
She looked awful, and actually the reason I learnt that she'd had the crash is because Alice Barnes was incredibly upset when she came over the line, went over to her parents, close to tears, and I think she was then in tears, telling them that Abby had had a really bad crash. And so we went down to find out what exactly had happened, and we're going to hear from Bob in a moment to give us an update, but I know that after speaking to Bob that Alice's parents went in the ambulance with Abby to the hospital. We wish her all the best, but shall we listen to Bob? Bob, it sounded like a really bad crash with Abby in the last maybe 400 metres or so. How is she, and do you know what happened?
Yeah, we don't know the exact details yet. She was motionless when we got to her. She definitely lost consciousness. She's okay now. She recovered. She's very tough. She wanted to get back on her bike, but we couldn't let her get back on the bike. So the race doctor were there, was very quick, sweet spot, but very organised in the ambulance. I've just been to see her now. She's sat up being examined. She's obviously upset. She's had a bad run of luck with crashes in the last few months, so we're all upset for her. But yeah, she's going to be out of the race, unfortunately.
And no initial clue as to exactly what it is that's wrong with her?
She definitely lost consciousness and she's cut up. She hurt her hand in a training accident in France, which took a lot of stitches, and I noticed that was quite badly grazed, although the old wound hadn't reopened. So, yeah, she's obviously shook up and, we're all a bit upset for her, really.
And disappointing for the team as well to lose a rider so early in the race, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we were, you know, we've got a young team, and Abby was... quite an important part of that as the race progressed. You know, she's very good at riding in the front and to be there with Eva, so yeah, we'll miss her.
So Abby Van Twisk left the race unfortunately in an ambulance. That's a real shame. But there were other crashes involving other riders and a team that was particularly badly affected with Wiggle High Five. Their sprinter Kirsten Veild certainly held up by the crash and wasn't able to contest the finish as well as she might, because she would have been, I think, a favourite, certainly against Jolien Doerr. But their overall ambitions have taken a bit of a setback too, because Lisa Brenner, who came here in good form, she came off and I saw her at the finish and her knee looked in a pretty bad way and she was walking quite stiffly and pouring water on the wound on her knee and looked quite bashed up. But Katie Archibald was involved in the crash as well.
She was involved in the second crash that she told me about anyway, so she mentioned about Kirsten's, but then she was involved in a crash about 7 kilometres to go. Now, she thought she was just winded and that she hadn't come off her bike until I pointed out that her knee was bashed up and looked very much like she had taken a tumble and a bit of an encounter with a tarmac. And then she said, oh, well, yeah, I must have done then, but maybe I don't remember because I landed on bodies or whatnot.
Yeah, worrying for her, though, as well, because she's another one just coming back from a broken collarbone.
Which I asked her about.
Yeah, so we'll hear from Katie Archibald now.
Can you tell us how the race went out there? It's a very difficult race to follow without any television coverage.
I mean, it was all fine until it wasn't. The last 10K were just horrible, really. It was really, like, narrow roads, really sticky, hard to move up, and there's just people going off the verge of the road, left, right, and not centre, but we got into the final, I don't know, maybe it's like 8K to go, and Kirsten got caught behind a crash. So we all go and pick up Kirsten, and as our train gets onto the bunch, there's another crash. And I went into the back of that and needed a bike change, so I wasn't there for the finish. And I don't think it went to... Well, I mean, it can't have gone to plan. So, yeah, I think a lot of frustration.
And I see some blood in your arm. Is that from the crash that you got held up in?
Yeah.
And your knee as well? Didn't seem to notice that.
It was basically... So it must have been, say, 4 bikes in front, but it just the way it went... was, say, one person crashed, another person crashed, another person slammed on, and so I went into somebody's bike, and so I didn't really hit the deck, I just hit a person, and all the wind ran out of me, and also I don't know what I've done to their bike, but my bike was in a state, So this is my this is the spare. Well, I forgot what the question was. It wasn't good.
Well, I was going to ask because you say you didn't come off your bike, but your knee looks pretty bashed up.
I hit the deck, but in a very sort of thumpy way, hitting a lot of other stuff first. So that wasn't ideal.
And how's your collarbone held up with all of that?
Oh yeah, no, it's fine. It's fine. It's the other side. So, but no, it wasn't an awful crash. It was just like I say, bad luck with the bike.
And I hear that there was a crash in the final, maybe 400 metres as well. Do you know anything about that? Did you see any of that?
Honestly, it's not even surprising. There were so many crashes. Like, the whole, like, just everyone on top of each other. I don't know, and with the symphony of the police horns behind you as well, because the motorbikes are trying to get through. And it's so like, clustered that everyone's fighting for space. And, you know, if you're the polite person that goes, oh, going after you, and then 10 riders go through, I'm sorry. So... yeah, it was sketchy.
So do you know why that was? Was it because of the course? Was it because of the riding style? Why were there so many crashes?
I guess that, like, everyone's been saying all day, we're waiting for the sprint. And so there's maybe only a couple attacks, or, like, a few attacks, but only a couple that really caused big reactions. And so I guess everyone goes into it really fresh. And then instead of, I don't know, 50 people fighting, you got 100 people fighting, so...
look pretty beaten up, Kate. I'll let you go and recover. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Thank you.
So, Katie Archibald there. I mean, lots of crashes on the first stage of a stage race are common, aren't they? They're kind of par for the course. And it was interesting at the recent Giro d'Italia where there weren't a lot of crashes. And speaking to a couple of riders about that, they thought it was because the race started on big, wide open highways in Israel. What you have here, and we had this highlighted to us today, just driving around the roads from the start to the finish, and narrow lanes, high hedges in a lot of places, twisty roads, and not the best road surfaces in a lot of places. And that is a recipe when, as Katie said there, everyone's fresh, everyone's, you know, trying to put themselves in good position for a sprint finish. That's a recipe for the carnage that we saw.
And as you say, crashes in a first stage of a stage race are certainly not uncommon, certainly not when a sprint stage is anticipated. But it does seem that was part of the problem, really. And it's very common, of course, for teams to try to control, especially if you've got a sprint in your team, to try to control that race that it does end in that bunch sprint. But I guess they're the normal tactics if the roads are conducive to then allowing you to sprint safely. But as you say, very, very windy roads. I mean, I was getting a little bit car sick, I must admit, in the back of our car as we were driving along. I'm not sure if that was
what kind of car we got again.
A Skoda. But yeah, but you can see that there was potential because as well they were so narrow and there was no form of breakaway. The peloton was all either strung out at different stages or grouped together. So you've got the entire bunch of sprinters just jostling for position for the last 10 kilometres and it's just going to happen really, isn't it?
And I think there was a lot of jerseys on offer. I mean, there was a QOM very early on and there was only one mountain, undulation to climb. So for all the teams, that was one possible jersey that you could get by just winning one QOM. So everyone was going for that. And then there were two sprints in rapid succession. So everyone was going for that because that's another jersey, that's possible. And then it was kind of just, once you got, that the second sprint was in Framlingham again. So then it was just like a bolt to the coast after that. And Richard, you were making comparisons to the Giro d'Italia, but obviously in men's cycling, the breakaway normally has a much bigger chance of staying away than in women's cycling. Women's cycling breaks rarely kind of pick up that kind of distance where everyone else can chill out. You know, they've got, you know, the breakaway's got 3 minutes, 4 minutes, and everyone else is just kind of easily going and slowly picking up the pace towards the end and then going for the sprint. In women's cycling, it's so much more full on because you don't have that luxury of having that breakaway that ever gets away.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you to Science in Sport for their support of the Cycling Podcast Femina, and in particular their support this week during the women's tour when if you're a lady, you can get 30% off all your Science in Sport products.
How do you prove you're a lady?
Do you object to that, lady?
Oh, no. I don't object at all, but I'm just wondering if your manners.
Yeah. If your manners are a lady or just a female.
You'll find out when you try to use the code, Orla.
Do they sense a certain level of class as you input the code?
It's 30% off all products, including discounted products, at scienceandsport.com with the code WOMENSTOUR30. So that's a great offer from Science and Sport, only for the duration of the women's tour. Now, turning our attention to the GC battle, and today was a bit of a phony war in the GC battle. And it was interesting to hear Yolene Doerr, because we talked a bit in our preview show about Ashley Moulman-Passio, Annemiek van Vleuten, Anna van der Breggen, Amanda Spratt all being missing from this race. And certainly Ashley Moulman missing because she didn't feel the course suited her strength. She's a climber. But a lot of the other riders kind of disagree with that. I mean, a lot of them are anticipating a tough race. Yolene Doerr said that this was the only stage she thought she could win as a pure sprinter. So that's, you know, perhaps going to be harder than it looks on paper, in part because of the difficulty of the British roads, maybe. But I spoke to Hannah Barnes of Canyon SRAM, who their team, they didn't come with a pure sprinter, but they've got a very strong team with really interesting options available to them over the next few days. So I spoke to Hannah Barnes about the team's approach and about her approach. And today, I spoke to Hannah Barnes last night, spoke to Pauline Ferrand-Prévot at the finish today. She's come off a block of mountain bike racing, so today was her first day back on a road bike. Let's hear first from Hannah Barnes and then from Pauline Ferrand-Prévot. It's interesting because you come here obviously defending champion, but you obviously on the podium last year, and a lot of teams are here with a sprinter, and it seems that you have quite a lot of interesting options.
I mean, I think we can go into each stage and look for the stage win. For us, it's a really important race. I mean, we're in a special design kit this race, which is super exciting. And yeah, we've got Kasia, who's the defending champion. Pauline, it's actually her first time she's racing the race, which is really cool. And yeah, for me and Alice to be the same team at home, which is really nice. And then Lisa's just coming back from a broken collarbone. And Aliona last year had a really bad crash in this race. So for us, we're all here really motivated for it. And it's super exciting to be here.
There's a few riders missing. And I spoke to Ashley Moulman the other day, and she was a bit disappointed there wasn't more climbing in the race. What are your thoughts on the course? Do you feel it's a kind of well-balanced course? Because, you know, we could see some quite interesting racing some days. Or do you feel that they should be seeking out, you know, proper climbing?
No, I believe that this race is really good. The distances, I think, is really good for us. It shows that you don't have to have a really, really hard stage or race to make the race exciting. I think it's a really British race. The terrain that we go through is really, yeah, it's like Britain. I mean, we start in Suffolk, which is really flat county, and we finish in North Wales, which is a hard area to race in. So I think it's perfect how it is.
So it's an idea to go into each stage looking at how you can win the stage and almost let the overall take care of itself?
I think so. I mean, it's because of each stage and how the race is, it's the overall is completely open. I mean, we saw last year that you would never have guessed that would have happened. So for everyone in this race, you can literally go into it and think you've got a good chance of doing well. And then it's the first year we haven't got this stage in London as well. So I think, final stage is going to be very different to previous years.
So how was your first day on the women's tour?
Yeah, it was okay. It was not so fast at the beginning, but at the end it was quite fast and hectic. So it was a good race to start the road racing again for me after a long time on MTB. And yeah, now I'm really looking forward to tomorrow and for the other stages.
What's it like making that adjustment from mountain biking? You've been riding well, obviously, on the mountain bike back into road racing, especially a fast stage like today.
Yeah, I felt quite good today, and it was good for me to stay on the bench and to spin the legs. And for the finale, I tried to help my teammates for the sprint. And yeah, I think it will be better and better every day.
What's your role here? You've got a strong team and a few different possibilities with the riders you've got. What do you see your role as being?
Yeah, we have a really strong team with Kasia, also Aliona on the climb. But yeah, I want to go for GC, so I want to today also main goal to don't lose weight, and we will
see. Happy. You're happy with your first day?
Yeah, I'm happy. And it's nice to be back on the bench, so I'm great. Happy.
So we heard there from the two Canyon SRAM riders, Hannah Barnes and then Pauline Ferrand-Prevot. And I'm really interested to see what that team does. Hannah said that, I mean, they slightly contradict each other in that Hannah said that they would be going into each stage with a plan to try and win the stage. I think today was the one stage that perhaps, you know, was the least likely to offer up something
for
them.
They were Alice today, weren't they, Alice Barnes?
Right, yeah, I guess so. But, you know, I think the other stages are better options for them. But then Pauline Ferrand-Prevot said that she was targeting GC herself. So it's interesting to see how that will all shake out. But who did you speak to at the finish, Orla?
I spoke to Danny Rowe, who's in the blue jersey for the best British rider. And she seems to be playing a similar game to the much shorter, obviously, Tour de Yorkshire, whereby she picked up an intermediate sprint. Second place, I think it was, for time bonuses on the first stage, which was a sprint stage, which then stood her in good stead on the climby, second climby, on the climby.
I like that.
It's not quite a climb, is
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Climby. Well, it was quite climby.
Yeah,
On the hilly is what I probably meant to say. hilly second stage. And anyway, so her time bonuses allowed her to finish on the podium. And I think she's probably playing quite a similar game here, trying to go for as many intermediate sprints as possible. She finished fourth in the first one, second in the second one. And she's got real ambitions for the GC, which are going well so far, very early. But let's have a listen to Danny Rowe. So Danny, best British rider, congratulations. We weren't able to follow an awful lot of the race because we were following an intermittent Twitter updates. Can you talk us through today?
Yeah, it was a pretty hectic day. Obviously, everyone's really nervous. Everyone wants to win. But yeah, it was a great race. I said yesterday in the press conference, it's one of my favourite races. So much support out on the roads. Brilliant route. And yeah, as predicted, came down to a bunch sprint. Very hectic final. But yeah, I'm really happy, obviously, to be best British rider. Going into tomorrow, I picked up some bonus sprint points. And that was the plan today, for me to go for those. And then hope that Mariana would go for the stage. It was pretty hectic in the final, so unfortunately that wasn't perfect for us in the final. But yeah, I think overall we can be happy with stage one. Four stages to go. There's going to be so many fireworks, I think. So yeah, it's just a start really.
And you mentioned the intermediate sprint that you went for, picking up the bonus seconds. It was a strategy that worked well at the Tour de Yorkshire. Will you be trying to replicate that again?
Yeah, exactly. In Yorkshire, it was the first time I'd ever really gone for it. And I had a really young team there. So I was predominantly on my own for the sprints, although the team, yeah, those girls were amazing there. But today, I had a team around me and it was amazing to, yeah, I felt like I had to pull it off. And I was fourth in the first sprint. So that was, yeah, I had to go really early. And then for the second one, I just, yeah, I had to pick up something and just put my head down and managed to get second. It was a lunge to the line with Amy. It was really close. But yeah, it's a nice feeling to have tested the legs and, work with the team as well. So happy, really.
Suggest you might have ambitions for the GC, is that right?
Yeah, it's one of my aims for the year. Obviously, being a British rider, I'm always going to target this race. So I think we've got such a strong team here, though, which is really good for us. I think we've got more than one card to play, as in more than just me to play, which is really nice. So I think it's really exciting. I had a bit of a crash with 20k to go, but thankfully I landed in the bush, so it wasn't too bad. Came back quite quickly, so I think hopefully that'll be my one and only for the next 5 days. And yeah, I'll take that one as, yeah, it was a soft landing.
There were quite a few crashes, weren't there? I hadn't even heard about that one. I heard about a few in the last 20k. Did you see any of those, and any ideas to why the peloton was so nervy today?
Yeah, so mine was about 20k to go, and it's probably my own fault, to be honest. I was trying to go down the side, you know, everyone's trying to move up at that point, and yeah, just hit something and sent me into the bush. So yeah, not great. But yeah, like I said, everyone's fighting for the front, everyone wants to win, everyone's so keen, and it's bike racing, and unfortunately that means touches of wheels and yeah, crashes, unfortunately. But hopefully after the first stage, I think everyone just sort of settle down a bit, get into the race, and hopefully there'll be less in the next coming days.
And today it seemed that it was pretty much under control from start to finish. A few attacks trying to get away, nothing really sticking. Do you think that we'll see more tactical play, I guess, in the next couple of days?
Yeah, definitely. I think on paper everyone was going for a bunch sprint today and giving their sprinters that chance. I think the other stages looked like they could come down to smaller groups at the finish. So I think everyone was happy for it to be a bunch sprint today, which meant there was a lot of controlling going on. If there were any attacks, they were jumped on really quickly. But I think that's going to change in the next few days.
So that was Danny Rowe of Wild Deals. And I spoke to you a little bit afterwards as well about the kind of racing to come, because obviously today was so controlled. She was pointing out that, for example, stage three this year, which is an exact replica of stage three last year, she pointed out how the bunch split for quite a bit of the race and then came back together again. So it's got a potential to split. She was saying that she expects much more aggressive racing on stage three. And everybody's talking about stage five, of course, and how aggressive that is likely to be. So she was saying she hopes she doesn't have to wait as long as stage five to be able to make her move. But she reckons certainly that today was a case of all the teams getting it out of the way, getting the first stage under their belts, finishing safe where they could, and that the real sort of aggressive, more tactical racing will maybe start from stage two.
And her team leader, Marianne Vos, yet another one coming back from a broken collarbone, isn't she? Yeah. A lot of returning broken collarbones here at the Women's Tour.
And what is also interesting about Canyon-SRAM's tactics and the GC battle is that I was in the team car today with Trek Drops, with Bob Varney, the DS, and there was a number of occasions when we saw Kasia Niewiadoma right the back, right past the peloton. She was waiting for other riders. So she was waiting for Alice Barnes right at the start, and then she was waiting for Pauline Ferrand-Prévot halfway through. So it's clear everyone's kind of looking at Kasia as, you know, you won last year, you must be wanting to defend. I know that actually in our preview she said that she that wasn't her target.
And she's won it once, she doesn't need to again.
Yeah, exactly. But and it's clear that it really isn't her target. It's not kind of bluffing, but she is actually, from all I can see, working for everyone else in the team.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Thank you to Rafa, our headline sponsor, throughout the year, of course, of the Cycling Podcast and Cycling Podcast Femina. We will be presenting Pedalers de Charme, Rafa Pedalers de Charme t-shirts every day to riders starting tomorrow based on today. So the three of us, it's not really practical to put out a poll as we do at the Grand Tours, because you watching or following the race won't have been able to see it live. So we're our own little jury here, aren't we?
Fix.
Well, you know, I felt today that there was only one real contender, and that was Suzanne Anderson, the high-tech rider, who was the only rider to get away. Okay, she wasn't away for very long, but she did get away. She was mentioned in dispatches as having, and I think she's the most aggressive rider, wasn't she?
And she was the only rider mentioned in dispatches, because I was trying to follow the names of anybody, because we kept hearing attacks are going, nothing sticking, a small group trying to get a bit of daylight. But I was still waiting to hear anybody's names mentioned in them, and none of them clearly stayed away for long enough to even bother putting their names out. So she's the only one who was actually singled out. So,
well, yeah. Good on her. She's a young rider, 19, I think, and she's running for a team with a very uncertain future. We mentioned that in last month's podcast, Femina, that they've been trying to crowdfund just to keep going high-tech products. So that's not a nice situation for them to be in. But I spoke to her briefly at the finish. It was quite noisy, but hear about her short-lived attack. Tomorrow morning, I'll go and find her and present her with the coveted Pedalers de Charme t-shirt. But here she is, Suzanne Anderson, at the finish.
So we heard that you had a go. There didn't seem to be much getting away and staying clear today. What happened? Can you describe what happened when you attacked?
No, we had a plan that we were going to try to attack at 100K. So that's what I did, and nobody followed. I came in quite high speed. I hoped somebody would follow me, but then I stayed away alone, and then I just went at just a steady pace, and was still hoping that somebody maybe would try to bridge, but I ended up being caught. But
What's the latest news on your team? Because obviously there's some uncertainty about the future of the team. What's the latest news?
No, we're going to finish the season, and we have a little bit less races, but we're going to finish it in a good way, I think.
How difficult is it, though, to carry on racing and training and committing as much as you do when
there's this uncertainty around the sponsorship?
Yeah, obviously it's a bit difficult since we don't know if the team is there next year or if it's if it can keep on going. So yeah, it's a bit a bit difficult, but I think we managed it good and we're still positive and all this, so yeah.
And a big incentive for you all to ride well this week, you know, given that you might be looking for new teams next year as well.
Yeah, if the team is not not going to continue, obviously I need to find a new team, and yeah. But still, there's, even though if the team had keep on going, I would still have a lot of motivation to do good races, yeah.
So that was Suzanne Anderson at the finish, and I'll give her a Pedalers de Charme t-shirt tomorrow morning. Orla, you're our cultural oracle.
The nerd corner.
Well, it's an interesting place. Now, I don't know this part of the world at all, but Southwell, Framlingham was a lovely little village with beautiful... And what's lovely about the Women's Tour and the Tour of Britain is when it goes to these very small places, you know, they really go to a big effort to welcome the race. And there were lots of displays. There was a lot of cycling art in the cafe that we were in, for example. And it was great. It was a really nice atmosphere, a beautiful day. And Southwold is another place I've never been to. Notable Southwold for very strong literary connections, because not only, and I'm just looking through my text messages here.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, I do want to blow listeners' bubble here and just say that Richard is just browsing through his phone.
Yeah, well, I just want to quote this verbatim. I want to quote this verbatim, but not only... Was George Orwell? He lived here for a bit.
And hated it.
A little bit down on the place. But George Orwell lived here, and as a child, Lionel Burney also spent He spent a lot of half-term holidays in Southwold with his family. There's a blue plaque up somewhere. He says
dystopian novels.
I didn't find the Lionel Burney plaque. But the other place, the other writer who's put Southwold on the literary map, W.G. Siebold, the German writer, who's book The Rings of Saturn is a very strange book, but it's a ramble, a walk through Norfolk and a kind of history of the place, and it's quite melancholic. You're not really sure where the line is between fact and fiction, and it's a great book. It's fantastic, one of several great books of his. So he spent some time here in Southwold on his travels and lived not far from here.
Daniel Defoe also mentioned it in his writings. Tour through the eastern counties of England from 1722. Of course, the Robinson Crusoe author. He mentioned how it's known for its swallows. I haven't seen any swallows today.
I think I have.
Oh, have you? Well, apparently this is like passport control for swallows in and out of England. This is where...
Is that Defoe's words?
No, that's my complete... I was going to use a word I shouldn't use. I've just... completely dumbed that down. Anyway, it's noted because this is where the swallows are first noted on their way into England, and it's where they make their exodus again. And he was wondering...
Exodus?
Oh, here we go. No, that is exodus.
You're like a sub-editor.
Yeah. No, Rose, we must fill you in on this.
Yeah,
this was a conversation over dinner last night.
Because Richard Wall's being pronunciation police. It was noted.
You actually brought it up, Orla.
No, Tom Carey brought it up.
Tom did, yeah.
He noted that I say Brexit. This has got nothing to do with our culture.
Brexit.
But I say Brexit, and apparently everybody else calls it Brexit.
But then I
did point out I've got funny pronunciations for other things. So I will talk about my appreciation for something, or I will initiate a conversation, and everybody else pronounces that like a shh.
Yeah.
I don't know where mine comes from. I'm going to pretend it's my French that it comes from. So le Brexit, for example. But I don't have boiled eggs in the morning, so I don't do it the other way around.
No.
Anyway.
Hey, sorry to stop you mid-flow.
Yeah, well, anyway. He just noted that there were lots of swallows here. I was going to read it out, but I won't. But I will tell you.
Oh, no, do. Don't let us stop
you. He also noted that it was in this part of the country that... farmers first fed and fattened sheep and cattle with turnips, believe it or not. Some objected, in his words, against the goodness of the flesh thus fed with turnips and have fancied it would taste of the root.
Do you have nothing to say about Ed Sheeran?
Apparently
instead.
I didn't. Oh, well.
I thought she was quoting Yolande Duir from the press conference there.
Right, so from Daniel Defoe, I will take you to Ed Sheeran then. So we started in Framlingham Castle, didn't we? Now, I have to say, so I got a bit of abuse for mentioning Ed Sheeran. How many times did people in Framlingham actually mention Ed Sheeran this morning? It was ridiculous.
A lot.
Everybody you met, did you know Ed Sheeran lives here? Do you know Ed Sheeran went to school here? Do you know Ed Sheeran's from here? Do you know that's the castle on the hill? Well, yes, I do actually. Have you not listened to the cycling podcast Feminine? I have already referenced that particular
connection. And can I say that Mitchelton Scott, I spoke to the riders this morning, and someone had told them that Ed Sheeran was going to be here today.
Oh, no!
Yeah! And I was like...
Like, disappointing.
Yeah, I know. I was like... No, it's not. And they were gutted.
Aww.
So sorry, Mitchelton Scott, that he, you know...
Well, he might have been. He might have just been keeping a low profile.
Do you know what, though? If they had heard us rolling into town, I'm sure they would have been forgiven for thinking that Ed Sheeran was on his way, because I was blasting out quite well, I think. Driving a 90.
Oh,
anyway,
but
another thing to say about that castle, actually, which is fairly relevant when you think of... like little connections to the race. But Mary Tudor, who was the first female monarch in England, was pronounced queen from behind the walls of Framlingham Castle. So there's a little female history connection here. Now, I said that to Rose earlier, and she tried to correct me by saying, Queen Matilda was the first. Queen Matilda was the first Queen of England. But Wikipedia says I'm right.
Hear that accent. So flattered. No, it's true. Wikipedia does say, but Queen Matilda does have some... connected, but then now we're covering all bases now. No one can say that we didn't know about Queen Matilda.
Or Queen Maud, as she was sometimes known. Who's got nothing to do with Framlingham, nothing to do with Suffolk.
Hardly anything to do with England.
But she came up in conversation.
But she was a woman.
So. She was a woman, so yeah.
If anyone's still listening.
Listening, our food was lovely last night, I have to say.
Oh, yeah.
And I would like to give, because you two are having your Adnams beer.
Yes.
Now, I was very pleased with the selection of soft drinks on offer, because I had what's called Posh Pop, right? Now, there are 8 flavours of this particular form of lemonade.
Who is paying you,
Ola? Nobody's paying me, but listen, because I went unwittingly, without realising it, for the flavour... Slow and Rose, and I suddenly realised there's me with Slow and Rose.
It's a perfect summary for our podcast
team. Oh my god!
Yes.
So I was drinking the liquid equivalent of our podcast.
Oh, wonderful! We had fish and chips, and WG Zeebald had fish and chips when he travelled around here. He actually bent his fork.
Oh
he bent
God,
his
that's
fork.
The most tenuous connection.
He bent his fork on a battered fish that had doubtless lain entombed in the deep freeze for years. So he was a bit down on the food as well.
He got to finish his batter in peace and quiet, because I was eating my battered fish last night and really enjoying the batter until Richard said, "Are you really eating all of that skin, Orla? That's remarkable."
So I didn't finish
my batter because I was batter shamed.
Anyway, that's all for stage one of the Oval Energy Women's Tour. We've got a long drive now. This is one of the long transfers. We're kind of crossing over towards the middle of the country tomorrow.
And
a couple of interesting stages ahead. So we'll be back tomorrow, won't we?
Indeed. Let's hope so.
Thank you, Orla.
Thank you both.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you both, Richard and Orla.
Slow and Orla. So one thing actually before we go, my highlight of the day was actually not listening to and blasting Ed Sheeran on the way into Framlingham, but playing the works of another composer who's from around these parts, Edward Elgar. You know him? So I used to love playing Elgar as a kid. One of my favourite pieces to play was Nimrod from Enigma Variations, because it's a lovely thing to play in the violin. So I treated you both, didn't I? You and Tom Carey. Rose wasn't there. But as we were driving into Framlingham, he's not from Framlingham, but he's from around here, and we were going past these lovely, brightly coloured little cottages and playing Nimrod from Enigma Variations, and I just felt a wonderful sense of peace, and I thought it was lovely. So we'll maybe try to play out with a little bit of Nimrod.
You've been listening to the cycling podcast Femina at the Oval Energy Women's Tour. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rafa, Science and Sport, and Skoda. The music you've heard in this episode is by Glass Pear and bensound.com. Big thanks to them as well. This episode has been produced by Tom Wally.